to only the most essential, all while wearing a mask and staying 2 meters away from others. The virus is...
Welcome to John Abbott on the air on CKUT 90.3 FM.
We went to John Abbott College and asked students the question, who is your biggest celebrity crush?
And the answers we got were quite amusing.
Taylor Swift. She's beautiful.
Definitely Paul Rudd. I think he could take me out for like a beer and we'd have so much fun together. And I think I'd have a good laugh with him, thus making him my celebrity crush. Plus he's also like gorgeous, so there you go.
SZA, because she's literally so gorgeous and... I don't know, she is just so talented.
It's Drew Starkey, because he's hot.
Oshkosh. I don't know, she's fine, you know what I'm saying?
All right, well, I have three. I can't really narrow it down. That's probably the most I can do. There's Margot Robbie. She's amazing. Love her. Drew Starkey. You guys know who Drew Starkey is? If you don't, well, look him up. And, of course, Dylan O'Brien.
Miley Cyrus. I like her voice. Makes me feel special.
Billie Eilish, because she's not afraid to be who she is, and she's gorgeous. I mean, hey, she's hot.
Oh, Zac Efron, because he's really cute, and he was in High School Musical, and I like High School Musical.
Chris Hemsworth or Scarlett Johansson,
because they're hot.
Kim Kardashian, because she has a big dumpy.
Overall, when we asked students at John Abbott College who's their biggest celebrity crush, we learned...
Some people have good taste. Others, questionable.
This segment was produced by Maria Keir,
Lisanne Bédard,
Isabella Ninchevich.
Hello, everybody. I'm Dusty Goldberg. I'm on John Abbott on the air for CKUT 90.3 FM, and for this interview, I had a very special guest with me. I was joined by Alfred Hope, a Vietnam War veteran and private of the 23rd Infantry Division. He was in Vietnam between late 1967 to 1970 and earned several medals for his service. He is an American born and raised, and is now a Canadian citizen living in Halifax, Nova Scotia with his wife. I ventured to Halifax to ask him a few questions, and here's that interview right now.
Alfred, how are you doing?
I'm great today. Thanks for having me, Dustin.
No problem. Now, I was hoping that you could talk a little bit about yourself and what you're up to right now before we get into it.
I'm a grandfather of 14 kids, of grandchildren. I spend my time enjoying them, playing from anything from soccer to I enjoy equestrian with my youngest daughter, granddaughter. And otherwise, I spend time playing bridge with my lovely wife, Honoria.
14 grandchildren. It's got to be some holiday dinners.
Oh, let me tell you, at the holiday time, I guess it's the most chaotic to speak of. I'm always the one who's afraid to ask what's new.
Okay. Now we'll get into it. You were in the Vietnam War.
Yes, I was.
What was it like when you got there?
When I first arrived?
How did you feel, you and the people that had never been...
Well, I'll tell you the truth. When we landed, it was in a helicopter. And when we got off, all we heard was noise. You couldn't sort it out. You had shell shock just by jumping out. So before you know it, you're being yelled at by your sergeants and get yourself into order. It was chaos.
And would you characterize it as sort of a culture shock for you, having been in a completely different place at that time?
Culture shock? Son, this was Vietnam. We had no idea what was going on. All we knew is we were there to fight. But when you get down there and your knees are shaking, it's a completely other story.
And so what was kind of the mood that you were in throughout your prolonged period there?
Everything changed after the first month, I suppose, when you got used to it. But other than that, it was fear most of the time. There was no cavalier attitude like you saw in some of those movies like Platoon and whatnot.
So you don't just get used to it. It's something
you never get used to. Are you kidding me? Of course it's constant. And there's this constantness of being, I apologize, I get a little passionate about it. But you know what? If someone said to me, what was your biggest takeaway? I would say I was wet 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
And when you were finally pulled out, were you relieved? Or was there some things that you missed because you had sort of gotten used to that way of living?
Well, the truth of the matter is I missed very, very, very much the food.
The food?
Well, when we first came back, there was no little Vietnamese restaurants about. Okay, there was not so a lot of the soup, a lot of the local food that was not part of my rations or part of my mess. You come to love it. There's so much spice and there was so much fresh herbs like cilantro. It was incredible to go away and back to just the land of hamburgers and chicken fried steak. It was much different. It was I missed it very, very much.
Wow. You told me earlier, you know, we were talking a little bit before the interview. You told me that you were given a medal for your service. I was hoping you could tell me a little bit about that.
I got a service medal. I got two of them. One was for a counter-offensive campaign in 68, and I received another one, which was a Vietnam service medal. It was because I served in Laos for 30 consecutive days. And I'm going to tell you something, son. When I say 30 days, it was 30 days, and I didn't have hot food for probably 3 weeks of that of those 30 days. So a good portion of 3/4 of my time there, it was cold rations. And if you were able to heat anything up, it was on a portable. You weren't getting regular hot meals. It was a struggle. A lot of my friends got trench foot. Some of my closer friends, they lost their toes because you're constantly in a damp area. There was no roads. It was muck. So the struggle was keep your feet dry.
Yeah, and in preparing for this interview, I did do some reading up on the war and the different elements and things that went on. And one of the main reasons that the United States had to pull out was because the conditions were so extreme and there was such thick jungle and there were so many harsh elements that were just beating them down.
It was a very interesting time in our history where we thought that we could just bully ourselves into any theater of operations and win, and it was humbling. Because do you know what? We couldn't beat them in their own backyard. And there was a truth to it. And it was very harsh conditions. Not to mention, if the conditions were not so darn bad, the morale wouldn't be so bad. So when you have a soldier that wants to be anywhere but, it gets toxic. It gets toxic quickly.
Wow. That's incredible. And how did it feel to finally, when you got home, to go back to your family? And maybe get to sleep in your bed for the first time. How was that experience when you first got home?
When I first got home, everything was a novelty. Whether I ate a hot dog or made a hamburger or whatnot, it took me about 3 years to realize that I had some sort of post-traumatic stress disorder, though they didn't really call it that then. It was more of a shell shock deal, and so I was grumpy for a good long time. And then with the help of some of the VA services, I was able to get myself on a little bit of Prozac. And it kind of smoothed out those rough edges. So life's been, it was a good coming home. But as I may have mentioned, I missed the food.
Well, you seem as lively as ever.
Well, thank you.
Now for my interviews, I like to end them on a little bit more of a fun note. So I wanted to ask you something a little more fun. If you could be half human, half animal, which animal would you be and which half would you choose?
Oh, that's so interesting. Okay, because I have so many grandchildren, we play kind of these games between us. And I've always said that I want to be a carrion bird, so something like a vulture. So my top half would be a vulture because a vulture is an opportunist and there's always something to eat. There's always some sort of roadkill. There's always some sort of beast went down. And after the tigers and the lions and they eat their stuff, I could walk in there and just eat my fill.
So you would want like the top half with the wings and the head, but you would want the bottom half of a regular person?
Well, why not? I don't think it would work the other way. Because you think my mouth right now wants to go eat dead carcass?
I can't argue with that.
Okay.
Alfred, thank you so much for being here today.
It's been my pleasure. I hope this was fun for you too.
It was certainly enlightening.
Hey, that's awesome, my man. Thank you.
The interview you just heard was with Alfred Hope, a decorated American War veteran who fought in Vietnam, a private among the 23rd Infantry Division. He is now living happily with his wife in Halifax, Nova Scotia, after having been born and raised in the southern area of the United States. For John Abbott on the Air, CKUT 90.3 FM, I'm Dusty Goldberg. Stay classy, everybody.
Hey everyone, I'm Daniel Bensusan and I'm here with Mike Lazarus, Montreal's local fishing legend. And today we're going to hear about some of his notable fishing experiences, only on John Abbott on the Air on CKUT 90.3 FM. So Mike, first question I have to ask, how long have you been in the fishing industry?
I've been fishing full time since 1991, so it's 30 years now that I've been fishing my whole life, but as a career it's been 30 years.
Wow, that's impressive. Next question. Before fishing, did you have any other ideas career-wise, or was it always fishing first?
I fished my whole life because I grew up in a fishing family, and it's all I ever really wanted to do. I had the fever, so I made fishing my first priority, but mm-hmm. I did go to school, and I went to McGill, and I was studying in environmental science and urban planning and geography, but at that time I was fishing and working already at the same time, too, and I just decided to go with the fishing.
All right, sounds good. Next, what does your average fishing day look like?
This time of the year, it's not so bad. I usually meet my guys at 9 in the morning, do my drive, whether it's anywhere from 20 minutes to an hour and 15 minutes, and then I'll fish till dark. And right now, it's getting dark probably at 6:20 at sunset, so I'm off the water at 7:30. So now it's like a 10-hour day, but in the summer, when it's really, really hot, I fish from like 5 a.m. till 11 a.m., then break in the middle of the day, and then go back out from like 5 p.m. till 10 p.m.
Not bad.
So there's a lot of hours.
What is the biggest fish you ever caught?
The biggest fish I've ever caught would be a bluefin tuna, about 900 pounds.
900 pounds?
Yeah.
My God. Was it tough to do? How long did it take you?
Actually, it was so tough that it took three of us like 5.5 hours. So
oh, my God.
It was not fun, but it was very cool because they're just so big, and it happened in a National Geographic type Ooh. Place in Nova Scotia.
Yeah, yeah.
So a lot of fun, a lot of blood and guts, and a lot of pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What did you do after with it?
It had to be sold to the commercial fleet.
Okay.
No choice.
Yeah. When it comes to fishing, what is one of the biggest pet peeves that you have?
Weather. Because you're going to get weather or not. And, I mean, weather dictates on how good the fishing is going to be. Weather gives you all the conditions, good, bad. You know, and you got all the hateful things that come with weather. You know, you got rain, you got wind, you got no wind, you got high sun. So weather's definitely that one.
Okay. When is it best to catch fish, season and time of the day-wise?
The best time of the year to catch fish is in the summer because the water's the warmest. The fish's metabolic process is a lot faster, so they have to eat more. But the best time of the year to catch the biggest ones, especially the fish that I fish for, the muskie, is in the fall when, you know, they're eating and gaining weight and developing egg mass. So the true trophies come in October, November, and December.
Would you say midday, at night, in the mornings?
That all depends on conditions. Barometer, weather, wind, you know, that dictates when the fish are going to bite.
Yeah. All right. Is there a fish that you haven't caught yet that you want to catch?
Now, there's a lot of fish that I haven't caught. One that I really want to catch that I haven't caught yet would probably be the dogtooth tuna. And they come from faraway places, but it's a very impressive fish. Wicked teeth, and they get pretty big.
Do you know how big they get?
They get to about 200-300 pounds, but, I mean, just the most impressive face you've ever seen in your life. They're all teeth, and they look deathly.
All right. Let's see. What's next? Yeah. What matters more, the bait or the waters when it comes to finding fish?
Both of them, I mean, but I mean, most important is, you know, a fish has to have a home range where he's got food. So, I mean, food dictates everything.
What was your worst fishing experience?
All my bad fishing experiences usually have to do with things that get in the way of fishing, like breakdowns, electronic breakdowns, trailer breakdowns, flat tires, missed flights, you know, all the things that can ruin a trip. Weather, too much rain, mud, blown out, stuff like that.
Weather's really the big one out of there, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, do you have any tips for young fishermen?
The best thing I can tell young fishermen is when you're going to start right away, pick a fish where you tend to go out and catch them. I mean, you don't want to make it so it's not a fun experience. You want to catch some fish. And if you're young and you want to learn and you want to make fishing, you know, like a hobby or something like that, you only learn from data. And the data you get is catching fish. So definitely pick a fish that you're going to catch.
All right. Have you ever fished with someone notable, famous, someone like that?
I fished with lots of famous people. Very lucky. I fished with some rock stars. I fished with some sports guys. And I've been asked to fish by all kinds of people, but because I'm usually booked in advance, it's tough. I've been very lucky like that.
That's good to hear. Final question. What is your favorite fish?
My favorite fish would have to be the Atlantic salmon. I mean, there's a few other ones I really love, like tarpon and permit and wild steelhead, but Atlantic salmon for me is probably the coolest fish because it's a fish that you catch when it's not eating. When they come into the rivers, they don't eat. Mm-hmm. So you're playing on their behavior of when they were younger. You're trying to trick them and all that, and it's all on floating line. It's all on the surface. So it's really impressive, and it happens in beautiful places.
That's pretty cool to hear. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. Thank you so much, Mike, for all this. Yeah, best of luck with fishing this coming season. And for more like this, be sure to tune in to John Abbott on the Air on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm Daniel Bensusan with Mike Lazarus, Montreal's local fishing legend. Hope you have a good rest of your day, y'all.
Cheers.
Hi, my name is Gabriel Simeon, reporting for John Abbott on the Air on CKUT 90.3 FM. When I say the word photography, what's the first thing that comes to mind? Is it the brand of a camera? Is it the different kind of lens? Or maybe a well-known photographer you know? Because for me, it has to be the word memories. Cameras have been around for a very long time. In fact, the first time someone ever used a camera was in the year 1826 by French scientist Joseph Nicéphore Niépce.
There was a man named Louis-Jacques Mandé Daguerre in Paris who was experimenting with the idea of photography at the same time. And on the 7th of January, 1839, it was published in the Paris press that he had created a photographic process and that the images were little miracles in and of themselves.
Nearly 200 years ago, someone decided they wanted to capture a moment in time for everyone to see. From that day forward, Niépce started working on other ways to make photography easier. In 1833, he sadly passed away, but the advancements of cameras didn't. For many years to come, the camera started to get better and better. The camera became more portable, easier to use, and much more accessible to the public. In 1888, the first Kodak camera was introduced to the public, making it the first ever simple and portable camera that could be used by any amateur photographer. In the year 1948, Polaroid came out with the new type of camera technology, instant image development. This new technology made it easier for people to see what their pictures look like sooner, rather than having to have them developed over a long period of time. In 1991, Nikon came out with the first ever professional digital camera, which is what many professionals use today, including myself, even though I wouldn't consider myself a pro just yet. In the year 2000, humanity was introduced to the first ever camera phone. Samsung came out with the first true camera phone in June of the year 2000. Since then, cameras and phones have gotten better and better. Photography can be very fun, yet sometimes very challenging due to all the technical aspects that go into taking a picture. If you're using a Canon camera, for example, each camera has many different options and settings that can be changed. The most important aspect when it comes to taking pictures is the exposure, which means how much light there is in the picture. When it comes to adjusting the exposure, there are three main settings that can be changed. There's shutter speed, aperture, and ISO. Just to briefly explain what each one means, shutter speed is the speed at which the picture is taken. Aperture is how much light is being let in while making the sensor more or less visible, and ISO is how much artificial light there is, which would cause the picture to be more or less green. If you're worried about these settings being too complicated to learn and you just don't feel like dealing with all those individual settings, you can always change your camera to auto and have the camera make all the decisions for you. Cameras also have different types of lenses for different types of pictures. For example, a 50mm prime lens is usually used for street photography, since it's the closest thing to the way the human eye see. A prime lens is a lens that doesn't zoom in. It's fixed at a specific focal length, which in this case was a 50 millimeter. A zoom lens, on the other hand, is exactly what it sounds like. A lens that zooms in from one length to another. A lens like that can have a zoom anywhere from 16 to 35 millimeter, all the way to a 70 millimeter to 200 millimeter. There's always a lens for any occasion. There are also different types of cameras when it comes to the internal aspects. The two main types of cameras that people use nowadays are mirrorless cameras and DSLR cameras. DSLR stands for Digital Single Lens Reflex, which means it has a mirror that reflects the image to the viewfinder. A mirrorless camera is exactly what the name entails. It doesn't have a mirror, which means the viewfinder is another small screen which shows what the sensor is seeing. Each of these cameras have their pros and their cons. For example, a DSLR camera is more expensive than a mirrorless camera, but on the other hand, mirrorless cameras have a smaller battery life. Research is key when you're on the look for a camera due to the amount of options and features one camera could have over another. While all this may sound fun and easy, cameras are still super expensive. This price can vary depending on which type you buy, like mentioned before, and from which company. For example, if you just want to have a simple point-shoot camera that doesn't need all the fancy exposure settings, then you're looking at spending about $200 max. A top-of-the-line camera, however, can go from anywhere from about $800 to $10,000. And that's not even including the lens, which in some cases can be more expensive than the camera itself. An example of this is pretty much every Sony camera and lens. Let me give you a scenario. If one day you decide to become a wildlife photographer because you simply love animals and you decide to go to Sony and buy a camera from them, a good camera for wildlife photography would be the Sony A7R Mark IV. It has great image quality and it's perfect for what you want to do. But the camera is about $4,000 and you haven't even bought the lens yet. And in this case, you'll need to buy a lens that zooms in a lot. So, you decide to buy their 600mm prime lens for the amazing price of just $16,000. So, before you decide on picking up photography as a new hobby, be prepared to spend a lot of money. I first got into photography after watching videos on street photography. I then decided to search through my entire house and managed to find an old 2008 camera, and I've been using that ever since. All of last summer, I would go out for walks and take pictures of anything I saw. In the beginning, the results weren't the best, but over time, they got better. Since I started photography, I realized that a lot of my friends like it as well, and I figured that they would be perfect for this assignment. So I asked all of them what got them into photography and why they like it so much, and here's what they had to say.
Hello, my name is Henry Blanco Stig. Photography is an art and a medium that offers so many possibilities for creative expression, technical expertise, and a sheer variety of ways to capture an image. Age is not a barrier in learning to take pictures, and you can start with the camera on your phone. Due to the fact that I travel extensively, I want to share through this art form a moment of light in time, for that is what photography is, the capture of light. That light that shines off a person's face, a building, a landscape, to capture the emotion evoking rays of light that tell a story and the ability to share those stories with many people from all walks of life and interests is the motivation that keeps me captivated by this wonderful medium. Anyone can take a picture. The goal is for that picture to capture a moment in time, tell a story, and evoke the emotions within yourself and the people you share it with. Whether indoors or outdoors, look at life through the shutter and see the hidden jewels.
I find photography so cool because it can make anything interesting. It can be a way to capture a moment forever. It can also be a way to tell a story. It can also bring out emotions such as happiness, sadness, fear, and my favorite, nostalgia. And with the accessibility of cameras on our phones today, it makes it so much more easier, and really anyone can do it.
Today, I'm accompanied by one of my friends, Jane. She's the reason I got into photography in the first place. So thanks for being on this show. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thanks for asking.
So, what got you into photography in the first place, and why do you like it so much?
So, I think what interests me most about photography, and also probably why I got into it today, is its ability to capture moments in time. From the images that I have taken, I love looking back and reminiscing on something which I could have easily forgotten about. There's also at times when the camera catches something so amazing, which you hadn't seen before, but in post-production, it just all comes together. Photography is also a great way to reflect upon history and the moments which have brought us to today. It's truly quite fascinating. I suggest anyone to try it out because you can be very impressed with what your camera can see.
You know, I gotta agree with that. Cameras really do help capture a moment in time. Seems like that's all the time we have for today. Thanks again for being on the show and telling us your story about photography.
Thanks for having me.
Photography, a very complicated yet somehow easy activity for people that love capturing moments in time. Cameras can be annoying from time to time, but at the end of the day, the results are always worth it. Photography is something that anyone can pick up and has been made much easier with the vast selection of cameras for sale in an ever-expanding market. After listening to this documentary, I'll ask you again, what's the first word that comes to mind when I say the word photography? Is it still the brand of camera, or is it something with more meaning?
Are you trying to decide which cégep to go to after graduation? We're going to tell you about a very special place. You'll have no problem deciding after you hear about this cégep. It's all here at John Abbott College, a very special cégep. Cégeps, John Abbott offers two kinds of post-secondary education, a two-year pre-university program, and a three-year career or technology program. Like all Cégeps, John Abbott provides a tuition-free education for all full-time students. John Abbott is part of the Cégep system, but it has a lot of special features that you won't find at any other Cégep. Why not come to John Abbott and see for yourself? The campus is located in the town of St. Anne de Bellevue, on the western tip of the island of Montreal. If you're coming by car, take the Trans-Canada Highway or Highway 20 to the St. Anne de Bellevue exit. It's also easy to reach the campus by public transportation. You can take the bus or the commuter train from downtown Montreal. As soon as you arrive on campus, you'll see what makes John Abbott so special. It's only a few kilometers from downtown Montreal, close enough to be easily accessible, but far away enough to have miles of open space and clean, fresh air. You won't find a setting like this at any other Cégep. Beautiful scenery and a peaceful country setting are just two of the many special features of John Abbott.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. This is John Abbott on the air. I'm Evie Stockvist. See you next time.
Data. When you're not paying for a product, you are the product. Especially in web and email services, where multinationals compete to manage your communication so they can make a profit off of the private communication you are producing. Coombit is a worker cooperative trying to help small organizations or individuals get their email, website creation, and website hosting services off corporate services such as Google. For more information, contact us at coombit.org or email at info@coombit.org
That's KOUMBIT. We are not on Facebook.
Célébrer, moi c'est juste, fêter ou à fêter.